Support for WPR comes from Wills on behalf of Wisconsin Public Libraries, offering access to ebooks, audiobooks, digital magazines, and more. Available with a Wisconsin Library Card at wisconsinsdigitallibrary.org.
Support for WPR comes from Rutabaga Paddle Sports, offering canoes, kayaks, and advice for anyone wanting to experience solitude on Wisconsin waterways. 2620 Rimrock Road in Madison or rutabagashop.com.
In short, it's about the infamous scene of George Wallace standing in the schoolhouse door on June 11, 1963 and blocking two highly qualified African-American students from entering that school.
Tell me about your interest in this kind of stuff.
If you asked me, you know, 6-7 years ago, would I be writing books about race in the South, I would have told you no way. You know, I've been writing fiction up till that point. But I spent 4 years at the University of Alabama in grad school. As I saw my time coming to an end there, I thought I really don't want to leave this place without trying to embrace some of the stories and tackle some of the harder stories. And so I was really proud to have left with two books about that place. It meant a lot to me. So I hope I could touch upon it at least a little bit before I say goodbye.
Tell me now the research that went into opening the doors. A tough deal?
It was not as tough as the first book. 13 Loops, okay. Of course, is about this horrific lynching that took place in 1981. And having to research that was even harder. This book was a little more removed. A lot of it's about 1956, 1963, 1964. And so what made it really fun is it all takes place in the town I was living in, Tuscaloosa, Alabama. So I could ride my bicycle over to people's barbershops and houses and knock on their door and just really kind of see them, you know, 50 years after the experience and learn from their experiences.
I didn't have this in my preparation, but as you spoke, I thought to myself, I better ask him his purpose for writing this. Are you writing these as reminders for next generations of what went on? And I mean, you weren't around in those days, but it must make you feel as if you were.
I mean, I often tell people I read the newspaper for 1963 the way most people read the newspaper for today, I could tell you all about the movies that were playing in June of 1963.
Well, you got to go to the grocery ads and see how cheap everything
was. Oh, and the gas, all of that. I know, it makes me miss it, but that's about all. But, you know, I think I was inspired to write these stories, and in particular, the Opening the Doors book, because I was teaching an African-American literature class at the university,
yep,
and
I remember that.
I mentioned to my students, you know, hey, have you all heard about George Wallace's Stay in the Schoolhouse Door? And there were a couple of shrugs, and no one really knew the whole story. And I'd lived there for 3 years, and I didn't know the whole story either. And I thought, you know, I got one more year here. I'm not going to leave this place behind until I try to get to the bottom of it the best I can.
It was important stuff. And I think what happens most when young people who weren't around during those days hear what went on, they can't believe it.
Right. And that's what was so strange for my students, too. They couldn't believe that, you know, their grandparents, in some cases their parents, were the same ones struggling to get into this school.
Yeah. All right. Well, by writing sightings, you have revealed to me a writer of many dimensions, because now it's nothing like your other historical offerings, which we've been speaking of. It's a potpourri of fun fabrication as well as a combination of fantasy and fact, taken, I'm guessing now, from people you've known and actual occurrences in your life. Is that right or wrong?
Yeah, I would say there's certainly a lot of composite figures in here. I wouldn't claim myself as any one character, but I often get asked, you know, is your dad a reenactor? Because a lot of my stories feature sort of a bumbling father who reenacts this, that, and the other. And so, you know, you could probably recognize some of the people you see in here.
Okay, before we go on, though, let's make sure that people understand what Sightings is. It's a compilation of stories, some short, some longer. The impetus behind this book, did you need a break from the heavy stuff?
Yeah, actually. And I wrote, I often tell people when I was writing 13 Loops, I wrote that by day. And then by night, I would try to take a break and get a breather and try to write something a bit more fun loving, something that could allow me to actually enjoy the process a little bit more instead of kind of working in the trenches. And so this was in many ways a relief for me. It was something sort of necessary for my soul to write these stories. And I've been writing coming-of-age stories for a while. I've always been very interested in the coming-of-age story, kind of subverting it in new and unique ways. And so, this is how I spent the final years of my own coming-of-age.
B.J. Hollers is with us here on Spectrum West. He's an assistant professor of English at UW-Eau Claire. We've spoken with him about 13 Loops, his book about race violence and the last lynching in America. He's also written Opening the Doors, The Desegregation of the University of Alabama and the Fight for Civil Rights in Tuscaloosa. We are speaking today specifically about sightings, stories. You know, if what we talk about the book doesn't spur you to buy it, go look at the cover. It has a big hand holding a basketball. Now, in this book, BJ, there's a story about the experience of living in a neighborhood in transition. Native American family moves in. You said coming of age, and I wrote that down. I guess I was trying to define what this book felt like, and I wasn't able to come up with coming of age, but yes, it is.
I like to think so. And as one person recently pointed out to me, as the stories progress, it sort of starts out kind of goofy, and then by the end it gets terribly dark. And I think it sort of progresses in a coming of age fashion itself in some ways. I like to think that, at least.
You also talk about Sasquatch, who stars on a high school basketball team. You talk about Hitler as an artist, a dad, as you already alluded, who really loves history. I put in parentheses, I think we've all known one like him at one time or another.
If we're lucky, we have.
Yes. So you've sort of touched on it, but these stories are so descriptive. Where do they come from? How do you come up with what's in them?
Yeah, and it's so hard to try to trace a story back to its origin. I suppose just thinking back to the first story you mentioned, Indian Village, there's a small neighborhood in Fort Wayne, Indiana, which is my hometown. It's where most of the stories are set. And it's called Indian Village. And they actually have teepees, you know, in the neighborhood. And it's kind of this pristine, kids always riding their bike to the baseball diamond and to the pool. And sort of this perfect look of summer, you know, in this one neighborhood. So I really wanted to try to live there a bit, and never did in real life, but I really wanted to live there in the story form. So I suppose I spent some time cruising around there until I tried to figure out what might have been taking place there. Mm-hmm.
I can see what the intention of writing your other books, 13 Loops and Opening the Doors, is. What's your intention for writing Sightings? Mainly just a let's have fun book or let's enjoy reading book?
I mean, that's good enough for me. I hope people do enjoy reading it. But at the same time, I guess an argument that might be able to be made from the book would be, you know, there's a lot of cliches with coming of age stories. You know, they're just a, you know, an entire treasure trove of marketing value in terms of how we sell things to young people in movies and TV shows, how we consume it all. So I think it often gets caught up in cliche and it gets sort of a bad rap. So I really worked hard to try to make the coming of age story a bit unique by throwing in a Sasquatch or a family of clowns every once in a while.
Here's something I noticed that I have to ask you about. You capitalized the word dumpster.
Oh my gosh. This
is that a brand name?
Let me tell you, this was a mind-boggling thing. I'm so glad you brought it up. In the 13 Loops book, the same thing. You'll realize the word dumpster's in both of these books.
Oh,
and
okay.
It's capitalized there too. One day after that book was going to press, I woke up in the middle of the night and thought, "Wait a minute, why is that capitalized? Why did the editor change it to a capital letter?" And I emailed them frantically, and sure enough, it's a trademark thing, just like Kleenex. That's what they told me. And the copy editors change it every time I use that word. So That I guess put me at ease, though I still am a bit disconcerted by it. I can't imagine that being the case, but he promised me.
Generically, it would be called what? A large
receptacle, refuse bin. There you go.
So yeah. Dumpster is. I should capitalize.
That's what they tell me. Don't.
Does
ask
anybody
me.
Get royalties every time you say you say the word dumpster?
They're probably making more off the book than I am if they are.
Yeah. The way you wrote, and this was the fun part I was talking about. The way Schooners was written. You can, if you read it right, actually hear the voice of this person talking. This person writing this story, this person is a motor mouth.
Yes, he is. Yes, he
just
is.
Just can't stop yakking.
You trying to imply something about me here?
I don't know.
No, his name's Roger Silverstein. He's a young boy, and he sort of has some kind of emotional needs, emotional damage perhaps, and he's really struggling to get to the bottom of a missing neighbor girl in his neighborhood, and yet he can't quite grasp the situation, and so he's really struggling to find a way to do that. And so that's sort of what that story is about, a young person who's desperate to get to the bottom of something he just can't understand by just blathering on and on.
Yeah, and the way it's written, though, and so I did this, and then I said to me, so I think to myself, as a writer, that had to be a story that you had to write in one sitting, because I can't imagine writing that pace and then going to bed and getting up the next day and trying to pick up the same pace.
Well, it's funny, and that story and a couple of the stories, Westward Expansion, a few others, I actually wrote the story, then expanded them into a novel, and then broke them back down to the initial story. And it was just a way, I guess, to really, well, I'd like them all to be novels, but since that didn't quite work out, it was a way to kind of understand the voice more fully. And so the version that you read in this book, it's actually, you know, 200 pages long, but you get the 10 pages that it all kind of became distilled into. And that's sometimes all you get out of a novel, you know, 10 good pages. And so that's sort of the price you pay.
And I have to admit to you that I have not had time to finish the book, but I think you can tell that I've read at least a good part of it. And, you know, the sign of a good book is the fact that I look forward to finishing it.
That's great.
B. people also have to realize I'm not a literary critic by any stretch of any imagination. But for what it's worth, I do recommend Sightings to anyone looking to enjoy reading on a level that's like playing hide and seek when you were young. It feels like a game, but there's the intrigue of never really knowing what's around the next corner. So what's next for B.J. Hollers? I read something about doing something about the area now that you live in.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's maybe kind of how it works. When I lived in Alabama, I was writing the Alabama books. Now that I'm here, I'm sort of embracing, you know, what we have here. And of course, we have a wonderland of nature all around us. The rivers, I suppose there's no other way of putting it. And there's something wonderful and beautiful about them, but also something very dangerous and scary about them. And so as a relatively new father and someone who, you know, likes to take his kid to the lakes and the rivers, at least to look at them or splash around a bit, I've become very, very entranced, I suppose, by the rivers. And so, yeah, I've been writing quite a bit about some of the more difficult things that have occurred in them, primarily drownings, especially in the years between 1880 and 1920 or so.
So how long does it take for B.J. Hollers to live in a place before he decides there's enough to write about?
You know, that's a good question. I certainly don't think I am an expert on Eau Claire or the rivers by any stretch, but I certainly didn't feel that way about the Alabama books either. But I suppose more than anything, it gives me the opportunity to really embrace a place and live fully in it and try to go to places I normally wouldn't go and talk to people I might not normally talk to, and to really feel like I'm a part of a place, I like to try to write about it. So it's my way of trying to introduce myself to my place, I suppose.
Author and assistant professor at UW Eau Claire, B.J. Hollers. The book is called Sightings, : Stories. Read it. You'll like it. B.J., thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Al.